Hello, welcome to the Heritage Radio Network and At the Root of It. This is Erin Fitzpatrick recording out of Roberta's in Bushwick. It's the 15th of September. And we'll start today's show with the Week in Wine recap. A leading story that Germany is planning to build a bridge in the Mosel wine region. Protesters gathered last Friday in the village of Erzig in an effort to prevent plans of the building of a four-lane, mile-long highway bridge across the Mosel River, a project that threatens a handful of Germany's most celebrated vineyards, among them Selbach Oster, J.J. Prum, and Dr. Lausen. I will keep listeners abreast of the developments on this and what we can do from here to help prevent this. Hugh Johnson, the celebrated UK wine writer, took a special trip to the Mosel this past week in order to encourage protesters to continue with their efforts so that the government may take more consideration of stopping this movement. And predicting sales of Argentinian Malbec and Torrontes to increase after Del Potro's impressive win last night at the U.S. Open men's final. What a match. In the crop report, with all the rain in the region this past several months, one must wonder how the Long Island crop is faring. It has indeed been a difficult year for grape growers in Long Island. Cool, rainy spring prevented the flowering of the vines and less grapes developed. Winemakers are hoping for an Indian summer in the last months of the growing season. There will undoubtedly be a smaller crop this year, but now growers are hoping that that smaller size crop will ripen with the blessing of a few more warmer days. If yesterday and today are any indication, things are looking up for the 2009 vintage. And in the market feed, champagne shipments could drop by more than 60 million bottles this year if shipments continue to fall at the current rate. Shipments were down almost 20% in the first 6 months of the year. Volume has not been this low since the post-millennium hangover in 2001. Prices in France have been cut in an effort to move unsold stock, and it has been reported that French government is on the verge of helping its country survive the economic crisis, but details on this specific plan will not be finalized until September's end. We're going to take a short break and be back with our guest this afternoon. Welcome back to At the Root of It. This is Erin broadcasting out of Roberta's restaurant in Bushwick. For all our listeners, feel free to call in at 718-497-2128 at any point during today's show. And thank you to our sponsor, TechServe, our Mac specialist friends over on 23rd Street. I want to give a welcome to my guest this afternoon, Gary Dusek, who is the resident wine guy here at Roberta's. Welcome, Gary.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Now, you've just joined the team over here recently, no?
Yeah, about 2 months ago.
And where are you reigning from?
Reigning from California originally. I've been in New York for about 9 years. Definitely have run some serious wine programs here in New York and I'm happy to be a part of Roberta's.
Great, great. So you're going to run the wine program here and also perhaps develop an events program based around wine as well?
And we're going to grow some wine.
Oh, we've got plans for some vines. Absolutely. I like that.
Vitis vinifera is what they call it. As far
that's
as
a European term, vitis vinifera.
That's the Latin term.
Latin
yes.
term.
Yes, absolutely.
Will you define for us what that exactly means for our listeners, vitis vinifera?
This is the cultivated wine grape rather than the wild wine grape that has grown for throughout many centuries throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
So vitis vinifera is the basically the specific term for the cultivated wine grape.
And in America, we use a different terminology to describe our grape. It's vitis lambrusca.
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 Exactly.
Yeah. So we thought we'd start today's program with a bit of a historical root about the origins of wine, which we haven't yet tapped into here on the program. And I guess we'd like to just begin with, where does wine come from?
Well, wine initially is, the origins thereof are Mesopotamia. So we're talking about Iran, Iraq. We're talking about countries that no longer actually cultivate the grape anymore, but in the, you know, in the sort of recent past, talking about thousands of years, recent past, you know, we're talking about Iran, Iraq. We're talking about countries that are basically the hearth of human civilization, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And these countries, like, really, like, when you're talking about Iran, Iraq, and generally Mesopotamia in general, these are everything that civilization has stemmed from, if you will. It's the heart bread of
the world.
It's the bread and butter.
Yeah,
you know. So literally, like, all these, you know, the cultivations of civilization have come from these, you know, civilizations that have, you know, influenced and spread throughout the world. So yeah, definitely, for sure.
So we're talking 6,000 BC or thereabouts for the first data.
It's an arbitrary number, but yeah, you know, but for sure that these countries have, since the dawn of time, I mean, really, like, that's where our civilization comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about every civilization in human history, really, when it comes down to it, I mean, we're talking back to Pangaea.
So we look at the origin of wild vines in Mesopotamia, and then the migration of them to other countries and how it's propelled into the New World. So I'd love to just kind of go through that circuit so that we come to a better understanding as to where we are today.
Sure. So we're talking about, like, you know, Mesopotamia, the breadbasket, and then it basically spreads throughout civilization through migration. And, you know, the oldest fermented beverage is actually mead, which comes from honey, which is a totally different topic. And I won't get into that. But so basically we have fermented beverages in civilization. It spreads down through Egypt, and then Etruscan culture. Mm-hmm. comes through the Middle East and down through, you know, Troy and et cetera. And then it goes to Greece, and then we have the sailors that go everywhere, you know, Greece being a very, you know, seafaring culture, goes everywhere. So it goes to Sicily, it goes to southern Italy, etc. Mm-hmm. And then we have the Roman Empire exploding throughout everywhere. You know, we have Alexander, like, spreading that shit everywhere. Oh, I can't say that. But,
no, that's okay. We'll move on.
Excuse me. Spreading it everywhere. Excuse me. Spreading it everywhere. And then, you know, from there, like, it becomes, like, very solidified in northern Africa, like, all over the Mediterranean and any place that's actually connected by sea. Like,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Literally, like, we have France, we have, you know, Germany, we have Denmark, we have all those places that anywhere that these vines can grow, people are planting it.
Right.
So we get that. And then from there, you know, it's a very interesting thing. I mean, it develops through, you know, random things. The Roman Empire falls, and then we come to missionaries.
Sure. Which is a very, I think, important subject to dwell on for a few minutes. The idea of religion, how it is used by the missionaries as part of the Eucharist and during transubstantiation, which was a word that we love.
Absolutely. You know, I think that transubstantiation is a very important thing because, you know, what we're really dealing with is the fact that wine turns into the blood of Christ.
Mm-hmm. The idea of that, yeah.
And I think that actually wine is the blood of Christ, really, when it comes down to it.
Are you a religious person?
No, no, not at all. I'm kidding. But, you know, when it comes down to it, I mean, basically transubstantiation and the transmogrification of wine throughout the world, you know, the transportation of wine, if you will, you know, came through all the missionaries. And that's really what we're, you know, sort of like, that's really important because that's all the New World wine that you see, period.
Right.
Came so through missionaries.
Christianity is sweeping through Europe, and the monks are helping to develop the process of wine and utilizing it in their own religion.
They used it for the Eucharist, and that's why wine is in the New World, period. And literally, that's why wine is in the New World.
Right.
I mean, it could have come through modern times. I mean, there could have been some other, you know, situations that could have happened.
Right.
Like, literally, the reason why wine is anywhere besides Europe is, or the Middle East, is because of Christianity.
So then we look at some of the areas in South America which were cultivated with grape varietals that were brought by these missionaries. And I think that it's interesting to look at the perspective of how the migration from Old World to New World territories is today with some of the varietals that exist and flourish there. One in particular being Tannat.
Absolutely. I think that Tannat in particular in Uruguay is a very important grape. I mean, it's their national red grape. There's a lot of great things being done in South America with Tannat, and I think it's a super important varietal. I mean, it's Basque country, so we're talking about Basque missionaries that have migrated there.
Well, that Basque country is where it's home. It's home in the
Mataran,
Pyrenees.
Mataran,
northern Spain, where it exists under the same name, Tannat.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Mataran is the AOC in both Spain and France. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, I mean, it migrated over there, and then it does a different, I mean, climate change also, you know, when you think about different climates and different terroir, it does the same. I mean, it's very, very elemental as a grape.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about terroir is incredibly important when it comes to Tannat and when it comes to, you know, any grape, period, honestly. But, you know, when it comes to Uruguay, it gets a little bit riper. You're getting a little bit more fruit forward. You get a little bit more accessibility with it.
Because of the heat in the South American climate.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've had a few Mataran producers on lists that I've worked with, one being Montouse, and we weren't releasing any wine. That winemaker wasn't releasing any wine in 2007 that wasn't bottled in 2004.
Sure,
you know, they were waiting a few years before that was sent around. So it's interesting to see the expression in one country from the other, but then understand how it got to where it is.
Absolutely. It's very much more accessible in Uruguay, a little bit younger, and you really want, I mean, I wouldn't drink Mataran that wasn't 50 years old.
Oh, that's a bold statement.
And you pay, you know, I mean, I don't know of anybody that has 50-year-old Mataran, but
no,
in any case.
Not around here. Maybe in some deep cellars in France.
Exactly. But in Uruguay, it's very much accessible, like, as a younger grape, and you can
definitely... It still has a tannin, but it's softer tannins. The fruit's a bit riper.
Decant,
mm-hmm.
or open it, like, when you wake up in the morning to have it with dinner. Basically, is really what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Well, let it breathe.
Let it breathe. We are going to take a quick break and be right back. This is Gary Dusek from Roberta's in Brooklyn. At the Root of It on the Heritage Radio Network, heritageradionetwork.com, with our producer and engineer this afternoon, Lorenzo Reggioneri and Nat Wiener.
Bubba. Big ups.
Yes. This is the voice of the mangled souls, Gary Dusek, who used to be in a heavy, heavy, heavy metal band and is excited to be behind the mic this afternoon talking about wine.
Bubba.
So we began the program with just terminology about Vitis vinifera and the migration of wine from Mesopotamia to the New World, and finished last segment discussing Tannat in Uruguay. And I think it's interesting to look at some other grape varietals which exist in other parts of the world as well to understand how they got there, and then also to speak about in this segment phylloxera.
Phylloxera.
Yes.
Phylloxera.
There it is again.
Yeah,
sorry. So neighboring Uruguay is Argentina, and we have the grape varietal Torrontés, the flagship white varietal from Argentina, flourishing there more so now than ever. And this grape was believed to have been brought by the conquistadores in 19th century from Galicia, also from Spain, where it's called the same, although neither myself or Gary have seen it in any capacity in Spain.
Not so much.
Not so much.
Blends maybe, but it's not declared at all. It's mm-hmm. like in some kind of obscure.
But Argentina is quite ready to claim that Torrontés is a native grape to Argentina. But given that it was a Spanish colony, it would make sense that there was some introduction by Basque settlers. But it's recently been found that Torrontés vines are likely a hybrid of Muscat de Alexandria and Criolla Chica, which is also known as Mission grape in California and South America.
Mission.
But what else? What other grapes do we have? Kind of a migration of, even in the West Coast, where the first vineyard was planted well, there's in 1769 in San Diego.
Something that's kind of interesting is that Zinfandel, for example,
right.
Zinfandel was originally thought to be relatively indigenous to California.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just recently, ampelographically speaking, linked it to Primitivo in Puglia.
Sure, in Italy.
So,
Puglia.
which is pretty crazy. You know, I mean, the heel, the boot, you know, I mean, you think about Zinfandel. Zinfandel is very identifiable with California. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people know white Zinfandel, but maybe not the red Zinfandel varietal, but fantastic varietal. It's great. And in both wines, and Primitivo was just, I mean, literally within the past 10 years has been linked to
mm-hmm.
Zinfandel. So the, therefore, boom.
Yeah, there was a lot of questioning about that for a while.
Yeah, for a very long time.
It actually came to some sort of decision.
There was a conclusion on that.
Okay.
And literally it became a conclusion that, yes, they are related and that Zinfandel originally, you know, again, is from the Middle East. So they brought it through Pangaea.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Another one, I think, I mean, it's not necessarily a very well-known grape, but it's being seen more and more in Argentina is Bonarda. And we all know how many Italian settlers exist in Argentina. But Bonarda was understood to be an Italian grape flourishing in the Piemontese region.
Absolutely.
And historical data suggests that it's actually had its roots in the Savoy region of France.
Sure. Yeah, it migrated south, and then from Piedmont, like there's actually a lot of Piemontese, like, people in, they migrate to the mountains, apparently, because Mendoza is obviously huge. It's right next to the Andes. But both Bonarda, Malbec, and there's a couple other varietals that they use predominantly in Mendoza that do fantastic there.
Mm-hmm.
Bonarda is a little bit, it's going to be a lot riper from Argentina.
Yeah.
It's going to be, you know, a little bit of a higher elevation, but what they do with it is fantastic. I mean, it's really, really good.
Yeah, sure. It's really acclimated to Mendoza's climate and soil from the high altitude and other variables, we should call it.
No doubt.
Varietals, variables, yeah.
No doubt.
I think moving into the next part of the conversation, phylloxera is one to really look at with respect to the horse historical data.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, when we're talking about phylloxera, we're talking about the cutoff, basically, of any mutation and or indigenous varietals to countries. So mm-hmm. that's incredibly important when we're talking about varietals in general, like what people want to continue to cultivate. So
mm-hmm.
so what we're thinking about there is this is literally the cutoff of the biodiversity of everything, period.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a serious subject, but so phylloxera is a mite. It's a little insect that attacks the roots of plants.
Mm-hmm.
So it kills basically everything. Like, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Like, you cannot grow vines with phylloxera. It's dead. So what happened was all this stuff got cut out, and, you know, they you know, researched it and found that American rootstock actually was the solution for this thing. And apparently it was sourced from American rootstock.
Right. It's a phylloxera is existing as a North American problem first and foremost before it was into Europe.
So apparently we caused the problem, then we solved it. So
right.
in any case,
so there's other reasons that the French don't like us, and this could be one of them. Because
yeah.
back in 1860, it was introduced to France, and that's where it really took hold and just decimated vineyards.
Like, literally decimated every vine in Europe. So basically what we're talking about is, so then Davis came up with the solution. UC Davis is... you know, in California, we came up with grafting rootstock, American rootstock that's resistant to phylloxera to the problem. and it completely solved it. Like, it's very, very resistant to this.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about, when we're talking about indigenous varietals, we're talking about like things that like literally like people didn't really know what they were growing. It was just some random vine that they loved and made wine out of. And when that died, they have to they literally have to research. There's ampelography is the genetic research, like sort of an anthropological research of the vine. So they have to go back into it, find out what that vine was initially, and mm-hmm. then reanimate it.
Trying to graft to something similar.
Honestly, yeah.
Stock.
I mean,
yeah.
And honestly, like, it's crazy because Vitis vinifera is so genetically diverse that they literally have to go back into it
mm-hmm.
and find out what this vine, I mean, and Italy in particular being so biodiverse, they literally have to go back into this thing. Like, there's some variety, you know, Nebbiolo, et cetera, is well known. They sure. know that this is a varietal, but there's things that, you know, like Tamoro Nero and you know, and Basilicata, that's like they didn't even know that this was the varietal. They had to genetically find out that this is another mm-hmm. entire varietal. Mm-hmm. This is not Aglianico, this is
right
Tamoro Nero. Sure, so they had to sure. go back into it, genetically research it, spend thousands of dollars at least,
mm-hmm.
if not, you know, more.
Yeah, so in order to combat the phylloxera problem, they really took those two major solutions, trying to graft resistant rootstock as well as breeding of hybrids. And
absolutely, and or move to Chile
where it has never existed before.
Oldest vines in the world.
Yep. Well, it's interesting too that the hybrid vine, the idea of that was that they were going to try to recreate something similar to what tasted like a European palate but was using American rootstocks, American variables as well. So I think that in Europe they wanted things to be as close to European as possible and not taste like American grapes, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, the grape itself is not, it has nothing to do with America. Like, I mean, the grape itself is really, the rootstock is American, but I mean, honestly, you're grafting it for, it's like if you grafted an apple to a pear tree,
mm-hmm.
but you
mm-hmm.
still get an apple.
Sure. Yeah, so, it could pick up other elements, which I think that they were trying as hard as possible.
It's not like we teabagged the French, right. In other words.
Thank you, Gary.
You're welcome.
Well, I feel like this is a subject that we could go on for a long time, so we may need to schedule a part dos with you.
I would love to.
Okay.
Great. I'd be into it.
Well, good. Well, thank you for our listeners for joining us today, and to our sponsor, TechServe, a specialist in Mac products. And you can listen to this segment on the archives at heritageradionetwork.com. Thanks again, Gary.
Thank you.
El antifaz que tu maldad cubría cayó para exhibirte tal como